Hello and welcome to this sixth episode of the 3P podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Benazzo. I'm joined by
Josh Romowitz.
And we're also joined by Alex Castle. I think Alex may be having a few technical difficulties right now, but he'll be joining us in a little bit.
Alex Castle.
So there he is, Alex. Welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry, gentlemen. My internet is not the best today, but I'll try to be here as best as I can.
No worries. So today we have a special show for you. We are joined by Professor Abe Hefter. Abe is a professor at the University of Hartford. He spent the last three decades with radio in Canada. He has hosted a morning show on TSN, and really cool, he has covered the Olympics, many Stanley Cups, MLB playoffs, and so much more. So Abe, welcome to the 3P podcast.
Great to be here, guys. Thank you.
So yesterday, the NHL commissioner released the future plans for continuing the NHL season. They decided to scrap the end of the regular season and go straight into the playoffs. However, they decided to do a 24-team playoff. So the bottom seven teams were cut out, including my own Buffalo Sabres. I want to get your guys' opinion. Do you like the new format, or do you think they should have just said, you know what, the heck with the season, let's just start in the off season starting at normal time? Abe, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm happy to see the possibility that hockey will be back this season. You know, despite the game plan laid out by Commissioner Gary Bettman yesterday, this return to play plan, you know, it's, there's still a fair amount up in the air as they move through certain checkpoints and look ahead to the possibility of just that, a return to play. And, you know, one thing that Gary Bettman said at yesterday's news conference, which I thought really kind of put the nail on the head or the hammer on the nail, is the fact that he said, I want to make it clear that the health and safety of our players, coaches, essential support staff, and our communities are paramount. And, you know, the commissioner went on to say that while nothing is without risk, ensuring health and safety has been central to all of the planning so far and will remain so. So that to me has to be the bottom line. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm a sports fan. I'm somebody who's covered hockey for decades. I love the sport. I miss the sport. And if Gary Bettman and company are secure in their decision making with related to this return to play, and they feel they've got all the boxes checked and are doing absolutely everything necessary to again ensure the safety of everybody associated with the game, I mean, I'm good with that. You know, I'm not in a position to question that. I'd love to see hockey back, but you know, I've got some concerns about plans to return to action. But having said that, again, the commissioner he started to roll things out. And I guess at this point, we'll just have to wait and see, you know, how things roll out and if and when they can get to this, you know, direct move to playoff action and hopefully the chance to crown a Stanley Cup champion.
And to your point off that, we don't know exactly when it will return, but that is the plan. But obviously, there's still a lot more guidelines and rules that they have to figure out, but I'm just glad that they did come up with a plan for when it returns, whether it's in August, September, you know, hopefully earlier, but there's still more to figure out. Josh, did you have something to say?
Yeah, Steve. I just want to say I'm very excited that the NHL might be returning with the possibility of them starting with the playoffs. That means my Rangers would be in the playoffs, which is kind of surprising because they basically would be the 11th seed in this new format. But if they could do it safely and assure that this player's risk is not, like, they won't be risking their lives, their family's lives, or anyone, then I say go for it. We all miss hockey. We miss sports. So if it could be executed safely, I'm all for it.
Just from what everyone has been saying, if the NHL, as as well as others, professional leagues such as MLB, the NBA, if they can come up with a safe protocol, you know, whether it's testing, quarantining the players, then we want sports back and we're ready for these sports leagues to return. So that's definitely something to keep an eye out on, because I know we all want sports back in a time like this. So that was definitely interesting. But moving on a little bit, Abe, you have done so much during your career. So without further ado, we're just going to start asking you just certain questions. Now, I want to know, how did you get into your career in covering sports? Was it a passion, or did you what made you get into it?
Well, for me, my career in the media started on a campus radio station in my undergraduate days in Montreal, where I grew up and spent many years working. And at Concordia University, I was involved in campus radio and did a number of things, show hosting, news, sports. And at that point, I knew that's what I wanted to do, right? And from there, I continued in my final year of undergraduate. I got a part-time job working at a radio station in Montreal. When I got my undergraduate degree, I moved to Toronto and sort of began my career in earnest, I guess you could say. My first big break came at a radio station called CKEY in Toronto. It was a news talk and information station, and I was hosting evening sportscasts on CKEY, and I did a little bit of everything early on in my career, and that's kind of when I went into a sports direction. I was always passionate about sports and began to work full-time in sports, and then from, you know, there my stops included 4 years back in Montreal. I worked at a radio station called FM 96 CJFM. I hosted sports and morning drive and afternoon drive. I went back to Toronto mid-80s. I was the sports director for the radio division of the Canadian Press National News Agency, and it was there that I got a chance to really explore the world as a journalist and as a reporter, where I covered the Stanley Cup Finals, the Olympics, Major League Baseball playoffs involving the Blue Jays with the Oakland A's, Kansas City Royals, some memorable series there. And a stop in Vancouver. Came back to Montreal in 2002 and was involved at a radio station called CJAD, a news talk information station, where I was involved exclusively in sports. I did show hosting, and I was very much attached to our Montreal Canadiens game broadcasts. And it was during that time, so from 2002 to 2013, I was involved with Canadiens pregame shows, postgame shows, intermission shows, and did some backup play-by-play of the Canadiens as well. And then from there, I moved to TSN 690, which is an ESPN radio affiliate. And from 2013 to 2015, I hosted the weekend morning show there. And it was at that time that I've been teaching part-time up until that time in Montreal at Concordia University. I took a full-time appointment within the journalism department at Concordia while I was still on the air at TSN 690. And from there, moved on to the University of Hartford, where I am today. Although today I'm back in Montreal because of a COVID, but the University of Hartford is where I will be back when we're back on campus.
So Abe, you just mentioned the Olympics in the 80s. One thing that I, as a sports fan, know, even though I wasn't alive for it, was the Miracle on Ice happened in Lake Placid in 1980. And just being there, can you just talk about what that was like being a reporter in that time?
Yeah, I worked for Canadian Press at that point. So that's a national news agency. So my focus was on Canadian athletes and staying on top of, you know, the Canadian stories. And at that time, you know, the medal winners were Gay Tursky medaled in skiing. And of course, the story that caught everybody's attention and continues to catch everybody's attention was the U.S. Olympic hockey team, the men's team, and what would become the Miracle on Ice. In fact, not long ago, I had seen it before, but I watched Kurt Russell again as Herb Brooks in the Miracle movie. If you guys haven't seen it, watch it. The hockey scenes are amazing. So my involvement at Lake Placid in 1980 was from a Canadian perspective, but I was surrounded by the Miracle on Ice. And I was not at the game, but I spent quite a bit of time with a group of reporters from the Associated Press, like the Canadian Press, a news agency, and we were affiliated. So I got to know the guys at AP. We hung around together sort of after hours. And I know on more than one occasion, I recall being back in, you know, somebody's hotel room with a bunch of us just gathered around the television and watching hockey. I do recall attending at least one, and I think several, Herb Brooks news conferences. And again, as I recall, that was the high school was a focal point for the media at Lake Placid. And I can still to this day recall those sessions with Herb Brooks. And of course, just what a tremendous story, you know, that was. So as a young reporter and as a young broadcaster, having had the opportunity to cover those games, that was, you know, a pretty thrilling moment, and one that, you know, will definitely stay with me.
So, Abe, out of all the events you've covered, like you said, the Olympics or the Stanley Cup playoffs or MLB playoffs, which one did you enjoy covering the most? Which one or which experience did you, give you the best experience and most valuable experience?
I would say overall, kind of big picture, the Olympics. It's, you know, a league on its own in terms of the type of reporting opportunities that you will get as a reporter. So there was Lake Placid. My next games were in 1988, where I covered Calgary, the Winter Games, and Seoul, the Summer Games. And you may know of Ben Johnson and the drug-related saga surrounding his involvement at these games as a sprinter. And that was just in itself an amazing story to cover, and one that lasted quite some time, because after the games were over, there was an inquiry into Ben Johnson's positive test at the time. And I was consumed with that story and covering that inquiry for about a year after that. Again, there was Calgary 88 as well. And the most recent games that I covered would have been Vancouver Winter Games in 2010. And, you know, for me, the highlight, one of the highlights of 2010 would have been, you know, Sidney Crosby's golden goal, being there for that. I wasn't at the arena for that. I was set up. My reporting posting was downtown Vancouver in Robson Square. I was surrounded by maybe 10 to 15,000 hockey fans, and we were all watching it on the big screen. And when, you know, Crosby scored that goal, you got the sense that the city of Vancouver and all of Canada was just kind of being lifted into the air for a half second with the noise and the explosion of emotion that took place. So the Olympics would hold a special place in my heart, as well as the Stanley Cup Finals. So I covered the finals for Canadian Press from the mid-80s. I guess my last Stanley Cup games for Canadian Press would have been 1990. That was right in the sweet spot of the Wayne Gretzky, Edmonton Oilers era. And I don't have to tell you guys, you know, that was something special in terms of hockey dynasties and being there to cover it. Again, those would be types of highlights that, again, stay with me for a very long time.
And Abe, you really have had your fair share of covering incredible sporting events, whether it was the Stanley Cup or the Olympics. Now, we see those type of events portrayed in movies, you know, the fans going nuts, the championship experience. But what was it like for you, being a young reporter, being right there with all the other reporters, the fans, the atmosphere, what experience did that really hold for you? And how do you look back on it today?
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, and you three would know this to a certain extent, because in our classes, you had reporting assignments, right? So we'd go to the Excel Center and we cover the Hartford Wolfpack. And so there's experience around that. But at the end of the day, you know, you three had a job to do. And I had a job to do as well, covering these games. But, you know, you cannot help but sort of, you know, you're immersed in the surroundings, the environment, the atmosphere, right? And, you know, the Montreal Canadiens haven't had tremendous success lately in the playoffs, but to be in that building at the Bell Center in Montreal when hockey is at its, you know, there's a fever pitch in the city and there are 18,000 fans there ready to blow the roof off the Bell Center. It's quite something to be a part of in that respect. But all that time you're thinking about, well, covering the game, tweeting the game, getting down to the dressing room, interviewing the players, coming back upstairs to the press box, watching your clock on the deadline, producing content and copy, filing your stories. Again, everything you guys have done, but at that level. And, I mean, it's, again, the memories of all that I have experienced will always be special to me. But, you know, at the end of the day, you get up, you go to the practice, you come back, you do some pregame work, you're back at the Bell Center, head up to the press box, have a pregame meal, settle in, crack open your laptop, cover the game, finish it up, and it's another kind of day at the office. But to be able to have, you know, to work in that kind of office for me was something very special, right? And whether that office was at the Bell Center or the, you know, the Olympic Stadium in whatever city I was in at that time, you know, these would be pretty magical moments for a reporter, and they were for me.
Was it hard for you to find a balance in these moments in the beginning of your career, being the fan and then being the reporter and having those responsibilities?
I think you always have to. I mean, you know, we're all individuals, right? We're people, and we take our own thoughts and perspectives into everything that we do. But at the same time, you know, I've always approached my work as someone who provides a certain perspective related to the work that athletes do on the ice, you know, on the field, whatever the case may be. I think that's how you have to go about your business. Now, having said that, you know, when I was hosting talk shows on CJAD. So for example, one of my jobs when working at CJAD during the Canadian season was when the game was over, I'd jump into the studio and I would do the post-game show. And I would take calls from listeners. They had their opinions. I had my own opinion. I would share that opinion. An opinion is opinion. You don't necessarily agree with it. Maybe you disagree with it. But I think I came from it from a certain perspective of knowledge, a certain amount of experience, and, you know, a sense of the game and the game that might have been played that night. And that's, you know, what I shared on the air. And on, you know, on social media, Twitter as well, right? That's a combination of being able to share information. So if you look at the NHL, there was the information that came from Gary Bettman's news conference, right? The fact that they're looking at two hub cities for the playoffs, right? And all the details associated with moving directly to postseason play if and when that happens. So those are facts, and you step back from that, and now we all have an opinion about that, right? And we started to discuss that at the top of the show. And I'm of the opinion that I'd love to see hockey. Hockey fans miss hockey. Sports fans miss sports. But there are so many complicated layers associated to this story, that it's imperative that the NHL does its homework in conjunction with, you know, the professionals who understand or are trying to understand and come to grips with this pandemic, right? So it's a chance to have a conversation, offer up our opinions, but the facts speak for themselves. One fact is the NHL paused the regular season March 12th, right? And then the facts now that are coming out associated with the possible resumption of play. And I think we can all agree that we'd love to see it, but there's work to be done.
So Abe, I just want to backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
I know you're just talking about NHL, but one question I have for you is, what was one of the biggest lessons you learned from mentors or coworkers? One of the biggest lessons you learned as a reporter in the industry?
Great question. I guess respect. So what do I mean by that exactly? There is, for example, there's a process that takes place when you're involved in a scrum. So a scrum or a group of players surrounding a player, one single player, and that player is answering questions coming from all different directions, all different reporters. And you begin to kind of learn the sort of the pace associated with something like that, and the cadence and the sort of rhythm and the respect that goes along with that, the respect of your colleagues who deserve to have the opportunity to ask questions the same way that you hope they respect your right to ask questions as well. So there's a, you know, I guess a professional respect associated with the work that you do in that kind of environment, right? And it gets pretty heated in there, right? I mean, you finish covering a game, you know, I can think of the Canadiens press box, you know, way up there above center ice of the Bell Center. You've got to go all the way downstairs to the bowels of the building, and we are lined up toe-to-toe, 12, 15 deep, waiting for those Star Trek-like doors to swing, you know, open, and we all rush in, right? And we're all looking for players to talk to. We're all under deadline. Some of us are radio journalists. We're packing our recorders. TV reporters usually coming in twos with a camera person. The print people, notepads, their recorders if they're taking notes as well. We all have a job to do. And I think, you know, I learned pretty quickly early on that there's the respect that goes along with that, right? So an example, the game is over. You know, as a beat reporter for the Canadiens, I tended to spend most of my post-game time in the Canadiens dressing room, not so much in the visitors dressing room. So I knew what my assignment was. So Saku Koivu, former Canadian captain. Captain was always in the dressing room. Brian Gianta, more recently, the captain was always in the dressing room, win or lose. We would gravitate towards the captain. And, you know, if I didn't get into that first wave of the scrum because I was pushed out and my arm literally wasn't long enough for my tape recorder to be in front of the captain's face, then I knew that, well, I'm going to have to wait my turn if I wanted to talk to the captain. And I did. So that first scrum goes on for 5, 10, 12 minutes. And, you know, there's an understanding that the first group of reporters will leave, and then the next wave might come in. And whether it was Saku Koivu or Brian Gianta or whatever player was available, you know, we knew they had a job to do, and they knew and know as players that we as journalists have a job to do. So they would sit there in the dressing room, you know, still wearing their jersey drenched in sweat, and take the questions and answer them. And I guess it goes back to kind of the respect associated with the profession, the work that the journalists do, the work that the players do, and that, you know, at the end of the day, or literally at the end of the evening, the players are done. We walk out of the dressing room. The next step would usually be a separate room where we go to the coach's news conference. So the coach would address the media in a press conference type setting, not in a dressing room setting. And there'd be the kind of the respect associated with that. The questions would come, one journalist, the next journalist, the next journalist, and the media relations person from the team might say, okay, a couple of more questions and then we're done. So the pacing, the sense of flow associated with the entire process. And you get done, back to the press box, finish writing your story, and then, you know, you're done until the next game. So I guess, Josh, to get back to your original point, I guess a kind of respect for the process, understanding of what's going on, and an appreciation of the work that everybody's doing, whether you're a player or whether you're a journalist.
Now, Abe, I actually have two questions for you. First, I'll start off with, you named some of the players, Canadian players that you interviewed, such as Captain Brian Janta. What was your favorite player to interview, or which one did you enjoy interviewing the most, whether he was the most respectful or gave you the best answers?
Boy, there are many, many, many across all sports. One that comes to mind, and I never had a chance to interview him, you know, as often as I would have interviewed a member of the Canadians as a beat reporter, game in, game out, and practice in, practice out. But, you know, a Stanley Cup in Edmonton was like a rite of spring when I was covering the Stanley Cup finals from 85 to 90. It didn't always go through Edmonton, but most times it did. And so that was the Gretzky era and Mark Messier and Paul Coffey and, you know, a dynasty. And one thing that always struck me was Wayne Gretzky being gracious with his time, always being accessible, being there in that dressing room right up until the time the final reporter asked a final question before they kind of closed things up for the night. I always found Wayne Gretzky to be just that kind of person, in addition to being the great one. He was just really terrific to deal with in the dressing room. I can recall one time we were taking a flight. It was a flight of journalists and the Oilers. And so which series, I can't recall off the top of my head. But at one point in the flight, Gretzky held, you know, kind of a news conference on the plane. And the journalists, we kind of went up to the front of the plane. And it was kind of like an informal scrum, and we were asking questions, and he was, you know, answering them. And that's just, you know, how approachable he was from my perspective, covering that team in the Stanley Cup as a player and as a, you know, as a person. It was just, he made it easy for you as a journalist, knowing that he, you know, he was available to you and approachable. Sidney Crosby, I would have dealt with him maybe a little less than Wayne Gretzky. At that point, it was when the Penguins came to town to play the Canadians. That's the one I go to the visiting dressing room, because you knew Crosby was pretty well going to be a story on any given night. And he would be there taking questions, surrounded by reporters, knee deep, right? Microphones thrust in his face, patient, thoughtful answers, and he was there until the last question was asked. So those are two names that come off the top of my head.
And those are two, Gretzky, definitely a legend within the NHL, and Sidney Crosby's well on his way to becoming, I mean, he's already kind of the face of the NHL now for quite a while. But also, I want to ask you, where do you see the sports reporting industry going within the next 10 years? What, any changes that you think will happen? I mean, now with this whole COVID-19 thing, has that caused some change already? I mean, reporters now aren't really allowed to probably go into the locker rooms or get near the players. Was that going to happen regardless? I mean, I don't know. As a reporter for many years, what do you see happening? Not just maybe the 10 years, next 10 years, but just within the future.
Well, that's a good question, and that's a good point. You know, whether or not, let's say short to medium term, when, if we're staying with the NHL, when league play resumes, will there be a protocol in place such that, you know, reporters won't be allowed in the dressing rooms and that players will be brought out to a press conference type seating area? And we do see that. We see that in the playoffs often, right? Where certain players come up to the table and sit down behind the microphone. Members of the media are seated and, you know, raise their hands, ask the questions, which is a much different dynamic than, you know, storming the dressing room and looking for players to talk to. You know, whether or not we're in for a period of that kind of extended kind of formal news conference type environment, let's say because of COVID, that remains to be seen. And it's a good question. So there are the logistics, I think, that will be considered going forward when it comes to things like access to players and dressing rooms and things like that. What's that going to look like, right? How are leagues going to proceed in that area? And these are answers that we will get, you know, down the road, whether it's kind of short term or, I mean, you look at the NHL resuming play, if it's in these two hub cities, you know, what will that dynamic look like with respect to covering those games and those teams, right? I don't know. The same types of issues that we're all grappling with now with respect to, you know, 6 feet of distance and all that kind of stuff. That's, I think we're in that world for quite some time from my non-medical side of things. But I think fundamentally, we're telling stories, right? We're telling stories about players and games and, you know, and people, and that's, you know, what we do. That's what you'll do as journalists and as reporters. You may have a specific beat. It may be the NHL. It may be the New York Rangers. It may be the Buffalo Sabres. That may be your beat, and you will cover those teams day in and day out, and you'll have to report on those teams on social media, websites with respect to the news outlets that you work for. Steven, if you're a TV reporter, then you'll have your set of responsibilities. Josh, if you're working, you know, the Rangers radio broadcasts, you'll have your own responsibilities. Alex, if you end up working for a traditional print publication covering the world of sports, you'll have a print product that you'll be responsible for as well in terms of providing content for that. But at the end of the day, we're telling stories associated with the work that we do, and you want to be able to tell that effectively and with some authority. And it's probably a combination of, if I look at myself, it was at a very young age being interested in sports, in hockey, you know, playing a little, you know, intramural hockey at university. That was as high a level as I got, guys, believe me. And then being able to sort of take my particular roots of interest and being able to move forward, hopefully at the end of the day, be known as somebody who, reported on sports and reported on the Canadians in an effective fashion, in an engaging fashion, in an entertaining fashion. And I think that's what will be expected of you as journalists and reporters going, you know, forward as well. Technology is going to change, you know, the online world is going to continue to expand, you know, more apps to deal with. But you know, at the end of the day, I think we're telling stories, and we want to do that effectively.
As you have said multiple times that you reported the game of hockey because you love the sport, you're passionate about it, which makes sense. While you were a fan of the game as a reporter, I'm wondering, what was your favorite environment, favorite atmosphere that you were in as a reporter?
Oh boy. Again, it's hard to beat, you know. Well, I'll tell you a specific example. 2010, the Canadians, with Yaroslav Halak in goal, when Carey Price was on the team as well, and there was a kind of a bit of a goaltending controversy, but it was Halak who carried the freight for the Canadians in goal. That was the year they, beat the Penguins in the playoffs. They beat the Capitals in the playoffs. You know, they needed to get by the Flyers. They didn't. But in the spring of 2012, the electricity in the city of Montreal was just something to behold. The dynasty years of the Canadians basically, you know, came at a time when I was just beginning my career and working in different cities. So I'm talking about sort of the 70s at that point. But for me, in isolation as a reporter at the time working in Montreal, 2010 was pretty spectacular. In fact, I was at the Bell Center. They opened up the building when the Canadians were playing the Penguins in Pittsburgh, but they opened up the Bell Center in Montreal. It may have been called the Molson Center at that point. And they opened it up for the fans. So the game was broadcast on the Jumbotron at Center Ice. And they may as well have been playing the game in Montreal. I mean, that's how electric the building was. So that whole environment in the city, you know, playoff hockey in spring in Montreal, it's hard to beat that for a sports fan. So it was a pretty terrific ride, and really kind of exciting to be involved in it from sort of a media and sports perspective. I mean, the phones were ringing off the hook when I was doing the post game shows. There was a lot of passion there in the spring of 2010.
And I wish, you know, not being a big hockey fan myself, I wish I was still there myself to witness that, because it sounds like something truly special. And as someone who's trying to get more into hockey, I hope I do experience that myself one day. Hey, we've covered a lot with you talking about your experiences as a reporter, you know, working with the Canadians, working with the Olympics. How does that all transpire to you today, being a professor at the University of Hartford? What were the real steps that you took that you said to yourself, I want to take my knowledge and everything I've learned and deliver it to the next generation of reporters and broadcasters?
So when I came back to Montreal in 2002, I'd been working in Vancouver for 10 years. And I took a position at CJD Radio again. A sportscaster, a show host. And shortly after my return to Montreal, which is where I'm from originally, I started teaching at Concordia University, journalism. And it was part-time. And I just quickly grew to really enjoy that because I enjoyed being in a, you know, being able to share my experience and my experiences with my students. They were in the classroom because they were interested in the subject matter, journalism, primarily broadcast journalism and broadcasting. And I had, you know, I felt I had something to bring to the table, which is, you know, what I did. So, again, I quickly grew to enjoy that. And I taught part-time for a number of years, and up until 2012, I think, I accepted a full-time position within the journalism department at Concordia University. And right at that time, so I kind of flipped my career around. I was working radio full-time and teaching part-time. And then again, it would have been 2013, I started teaching full-time and radio was part-time. And I moved from CJD to hosting the weekend morning show at TSN 690. So I could teach Monday through Friday again and talk hockey on the weekends. And I love that. I was able to bring even those experiences back into the classroom. So again, I just knew early on that that's where I knew I wanted my career to go, and it did. And I feel very fortunate and blessed to be have been given that opportunity to do that, to share what I've done and what I've known for 30 years with students who are interested and passionate in the same things I am. So my contract with Concordia was a 3-year contract that ended, and I thought, all right, what might be next? And what was next for me was an opportunity at the University of Hartford. And it was an opportunity that spoke to me and everything that I've done now, both in the classroom and as a broadcaster and a broadcast journalist, again, for 30 years. And the chance to bring my expertise and my knowledge, if you will, to students like yourselves, be able to share that with you. And I hope what you would agree is a kind of a meaningful and tangible way, such that, and as you know, I'm always looking for opportunities for my students. So Josh, you were involved in a broadcast we did at the golf club before the University of Hartford men's basketball team had their tip-off dinner. So that was kind of like a pre-game show as you're part of your intro to radio and audio class. Our game coverage of the Hartford Wolfpack at the Excel Center. So those are the types of experiences that I have experienced as a journalist and as a professional that I want my students to experience as well. So it's just really been an extension and a continuation of the work that I've done and the work I love to do, and to be able to do that and share it with students in class is something pretty special to me.
Abe, we got one last question before you go. Sure. Obviously, we're all student of yours, and we have, before this podcast, before the show, we already, you know, have done some of these experiences, learned and from what you have done. But for those listening, those who don't really know you, what's some advice, or what's the biggest piece of advice that you can give them if they are striving to be a sports reporter, or even if it's not a sports reporter, just working within the communication field?
Oh boy. You know, my suggestion would be, and if I kind of look at my career, as you kind of explore your opportunities, an individual's opportunities, and what you're passionate about and what speaks to you, you know, whether it's in sports or anything else in media or communications. And this is advice that I've given students is if you can, again, if you can, I would suggest that if you're in a position to, that just consider all your options if you're in a position to be able to do that, right? And, you know, for me, that meant after school, graduated from Montreal, and I went to Toronto. And, you know, my first, let's say, full-time job, you know, wasn't in Toronto. It was in a small market called Brampton outside of Toronto. And that's where I kind of began to establish myself. So that was a position I held for a year before I was hired by CKEY. That's a set of call letters I mentioned earlier in our conversation. And, you know, without that opportunity to work in Brampton, a small market, where I was able to do a lot of things, news, sports, I was reporting, I kind of did a little bit of everything, and I think that was really valuable to me. It wasn't Toronto at the get-go. It wasn't Montreal at the get-go. It wasn't Vancouver, where I've worked as well, at the get-go. But for me, I was able to take advantage of an opportunity and grow with it, grow into it, and sort of continue along in my career. So I guess, again, my advice has been in the past to students who asked me that question, if you can, and you know, a lot of times you have to answer these questions as an individual, what it is that you want from your career and your life. But if there's an opportunity to maybe kind of strike out somewhere where the opportunity might be there, and maybe something that you didn't really consider, but maybe, you know, should you be considering it? I might suggest that you do consider all the options if you can, and then kind of take it from there.
Well, Abe, thank you so much for coming on, for answering our questions. You have just so many valuable, great experiences and stories that you were able to share with us. I'm sure that you have even more. So on behalf of the 3P Podcast, we just want to say thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Continued success with the podcast, and hope to see you guys again soon.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, obviously, guys, just that was tremendous. That was Abe has, as we learned, just taking classes with Abe, he has just so much knowledge within the sports reporting industry. He's taught us a lot. Taking his sports beat class, his radio class that he taught, we have just learned so much from him and are able to put, you know, the 3P podcast because of Abe. So, you know, if you guys have anything to add before we move on.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Steve. You know, I've been very fortunate to have a great slew of professors at the University of Hartford, and Abe has definitely been one of them. Haven't taken as many classes with him, incredible knowledge. He's always there to help his students. He's always there to lay out, you know, the rules very clearly so everyone knows the expectations of his class, and he's overall just a great guy, and I was truly honored to have him as a guest, and I really hope that we could have him come on again someday, because like you mentioned, Steve, a lot of valuable knowledge, a lot of great experiences that he can share with everyone.
Yeah, as both of you touched on perfectly, there's just so much knowledge that I learned from Abe after each conversation, every class. I learned so much today about him, and I've had multiple classes within the past 3-4 semesters, and it seems like every day I'm just learning something new from him, and today was no exception. So I would not be opposed if we had him on again. There's definitely more to learn from him and more knowledge that he'll share with you guys, the listeners.
Yeah, and the biggest thing before, just also, like we're saying, with all the knowledge he had, he's just a great guy. I mean, you can just approach him about school, sport. I mean, you can just approach him about anything, and he'll sit down and talk to you and actually have a lengthy conversation. And he, you know, cares about you. So he really is just a great guy all in all. So I'm so glad that we were able to get him on. And hopefully, like you both said, we'll be able to get him on in the future. So before we wrap up the show, I do have a little segment that I want to do with you guys right now. Last week, we talked about who we feel is the most valuable player or the most valuable athlete in sports right now. Josh and I got into a bit of a heated debate. But today, I want to get your guys' opinion on who you think is the most underrated or most underappreciated athlete in sports right now. And I know Josh has been waiting for his time to shine right now. So Josh, take it away.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Let's see if you disagree with this one again, because I'm sure you will, because that's what you do best. Before I go, I just want to say it was a tough decision because there are so many underrated athletes among all sports. Quick shout out to our Artemi Panarin of the Rangers and the season he's had this year before the break. He led the team in points with 95 points, and he is top 5 in the league in the NHL in points. He's only 28 years old. Who's having a breakout year. Okay, now that I got that out of the way, the athlete that I am choosing, however, is none other than Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers. And Steve, you'll probably disagree because that's what you do best, but I don't care. Damian is having a great season. He's 28 years old, averaging 28 points a game, almost 8 assists a game, almost 5 rebounds a game. And the Blazers are not in play. They're a game out of the playoffs. But Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are a dynamic duo, one of the best in the league. Damian is a 5-time All-Star, and he has been consistent in his eight years, only getting better each year. He's been healthy, started every single game of his career. This guy is. He's just getting better each year. And to think that he really is never talked about in the MVP voting, any of the awards, he's never talked about. I personally think he's a top 3 point guard in the NBA behind Kyrie and Curry. Curry when healthy, obviously. I think he's better. He's got better stats than Russell Westbrook. John Wall, who knows when he'll be healthy. So Damian Lillard, I think, is a top 3 point guard, and he's just getting better, and that's what's scary. He's one of the clutchest players in the league. He's the only player in NBA history with 2 buzzer beaters to clinch a series. Obviously, we know last year against the Thunder, and then 2013, he had another deep buzzer beater, as you both remember very clearly. Steve, I'll let you disagree.
Actually, Josh, I can agree with that. I mean, Damian Lillard is – I feel bad for him because they haven't really surrounded him with a team that can make noise. I mean, McCollum is a good second guy to have. But besides that, they really don't. And, like, LaMarcus Aldridge would have been good, but he left for free agency. They weren't able to keep him. So, I mean, and he is he just continually puts up, you know, great numbers. And I hate to bring this up because this is – but the Lakers' first game since Kobe Bryant's death, you know, the Lakers – everyone wanted the Lakers to win in honor of Kobe. And they were playing the Trailblazers. And I thought, oh, LeBron – I mean, everyone thought, oh, LeBron's scoring like 100 – he's going to break Kobe's record for most points in game with, was it 81, right? Like LeBron 81. Is just going to go sick. The Lakers are just going to destroy the Trailblazers. Nope. Damian Lillard, I forgot what his exact stat line for that game was, but he scored a lot of points, and he rode the Trailblazers to win that night. And he said, you know, basically he said, I wanted to play in honor for Kobe. Like, you know, granted, Kobe played for the Lakers, but Damian Lillard, you know, he did that. He did – his performance was an honor for Kobe. So, like, he has that kind of mindset that we've been talking about, like the Jordan mentality, the Mamba mentality. So, I agree with it. I have a different one, but I want to hear, Alex, who your most underappreciated, underrated athlete is right now.
So, this is a tough one, I'm not going to lie. I didn't really have anyone that specifically came to mind because there were so many players to think of, but this one guy popped into my head, and I want you to hear me out on this one, okay? My pick is wide receiver of the Green Bay Packers, Davante Adams, all right? Now, here's why, okay? Adams is one of the most exciting receivers that I've seen come into the league within the past two seasons. He's an alumni of Fresno State, so shout out to all the Bulldogs. He, in his rookie year, didn't necessarily break 1,000 yards, but next year he came back with 111 receptions, close to 1,400 receiving yards, and 13 touchdowns. And keep in mind that this is on an offense with and Aaron Rodgers, who, don't get me wrong, Rodgers is still a top quarterback, but he's been struggling with these injuries. He hasn't really had any of those major, major weapons like he's had in the past. And Adams, I just feel like this guy, you know, he hits the four S's when it comes to what you really want in a wide receiver: size, strength, speed, and smarts. And Adams has got it all. I mean, he is, when I see him run with the ball, he is a man on a mission, and he is D-back's worst nightmare. Now, look, don't get me wrong. He's no Julio Jones yet. Julio Jones is an incredible receiver, but Adams is someone that you got to watch out for. And let me tell you this. This is my prediction. If Rodgers ends up leaving Green Bay, which I think that there's a very good chance, don't be surprised if my man Adams is either going to be expecting a big payout from Green Bay and try to be the star of that offense or take his talent somewhere else. But at the end of the day, when I look at Davante Adams, is he a receiver that's discussed in the league with analysts? Absolutely. You guys know the name. Everyone knows the name. But is the spotlight on him enough? No. And I think this kid, give him another 2 or 3 years, he will be one of the most talked about receivers in the league.
And Alex, to your point, that's fair. I mean, as a Bears fan, I see him enough, and he's got me, you know, mixing up my words now because just thinking about him, talking about him. But he is not just good; he is great. He's elite. And like you were saying, his rookie year didn't have the best year, and a lot of Packers fans didn't. We're like, you know what? Who is this guy? Cut him. He's kind of dropping passes. He's not doing what they expected because they still had Jordy Nelson. They still had elite weapons on that offense. But now he's really making a name for himself. And I, you know, as much as this, it hurts me to say this, he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. But for me, so I could be biased and say, you know, for like my Bears, Roquan Smith or Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson had over 1,000 yards, multiple seasons with, you know, quarterbacks like Trubisky or Blake Bortles or Roquan Smith. Everyone, you know, seems to think, not that he's a bust, but he's not a superstar yet, but he's had over 100 tackles in each season. There's only two seasons that he's been in the league, and he had a torn pec last year, which ended his season short. I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to go to baseball. And I'm going to go Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I like this.
So the Washington Nationals are the reigning World Series champions. And many give props to their pitching because their pitching was phenomenal last year, especially during the playoffs. I mean, Scherzer was lights out, and Strasburg, the MVP, World Series MVP, was ridiculous. I mean, no one could touch him. But you can't forget about Juan Soto, and that's why I believe he's the most underrated athlete, because they had Bryce Harper, this star who wasn't as good as Mike Trout, but kind of was, you know, on the same level as him because they both came in the league at the same time, and Harper was their star, and he is a star in this league. And so then, after having a lot of success with the Nationals and was like their best offensive player in that lineup, I mean, you know, when you saw Harper in the lineup, teams were careful pitching to him because he could take you yard at any moment. And when he left, and he brought them to the playoffs many years, they just couldn't get by the wild card or divisional round. So when he left, you know, a lot of people were like, well, that there goes the Nationals' chances. Yes, they have Scherzer, but he's kind of getting old now. You know, you have Strasburg, but, you know, he had Tommy John. I don't know. He could be good, but who knows? And their offense, they have absolutely nobody. Well, here comes the 21-year-old. I'm going to call him Phenom because he's going to be a Phenom, Juan Soto. He, in his 2 years, has batted .282 and .292. So almost a .300 hitter. I mean, even a .285 hitter is great in the league. And his rookie year, he had 22 home runs and 70 RBIs in a shortened season, didn't play the full season. And he didn't play the full season last year, but he played a majority. He played 150 out of the 162 games. He had 34 home runs and 110 RBIs. I mean, those are all-star numbers, and he wasn't even an all-star. If he continues, not only can he hit the ball out of the park, I mean, he can hit for average, like I just said. And he can make that offense going. He makes that offense 10 times better. I mean, and he's only 21. I mean, that is, I'm going to be 20, but you guys are his age. And I think he might be turning 22, but still, we're around his age, and he's already doing this in Major League Baseball. So I just think he's not getting the recognition that he deserves right now. I don't know if it's because of his age, but even for winning the World Series, I still feel like analysts are not talking about him as much as they should be. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but...
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. That was a great pick. I thought, knowing your bias self, you were going to say like Gleyber Torres. That would have been a great
pick.
I wanted to. I figured you did. No, but Juan Soto carried them to the championship. At this point last year, they were 16-31. I think it was exactly like 1 year ago from yesterday marked their 16-31 record. And they somehow made the wild card. Like, no one believed in them. And they won the World Series. And it definitely, Juan Soto played a huge factor in that run. So major props to you, Steve. You hit that one perfectly.
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Ranger over here. You really did a great job. I think that, you know, a lot of these young guys, unfortunately, are not as recognized because of age. And I think a lot of people are skeptical to give them, you know, higher titles and higher props. But with a guy like Soto, you absolutely have to recognize him. And I really think that this is a guy that's, who knows, maybe he puts Major League Baseball back on the map again. Maybe he makes it a more popular sport. I don't know. But overall, I agree with Josh. Great pick. I honestly, you know, I think we all had great picks. You know, it's always great to discuss these athletes that are LeBron and Odell and all these big-time flashy guys. It's nice to talk about the guys that are under the radar but still putting up the solid numbers.
It is. And I thought today, you know, we discussed a lot today. And however, unfortunately, that's all we got. You know, we wish we could keep going, but we do have to go for today. So thank you for tuning in. So, yeah, so, but make sure before we hop off, make sure to follow our social media. We have Instagram, the 3P podcast. Make sure to give that a follow. Keep you updated with our posts, our shows, upcoming guests like today. And please make sure to keep listening. Even if you have to divide into chunks throughout the day, whatever, just please make sure to keep listening. You know, we got a lot of great info. We enjoy doing this and we want you to enjoy listening to it. But thank you again, and we'll see you next week.